Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Possibly the most underappreciated people at a football game is the grounds crew. But we want to go back in time and look at the early grounds crew and how they took care of the grass at the fields. Timothy P. Brown of Football Archaeology joined us to tell us about the early mowings of the field. That's all coming up with Tim and more in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to another evening where we get to discuss some football archaeology with the founder of that website, Timothy P. Brown. Tim, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Darren, thank you. Look forward to chatting tonight, as we seem to do every week, every Tuesday. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, I feel very blessed and honored to be able to talk to you every Tuesday and get this information that you share with us. Just a few months ago, you had a very interesting topic on one of your tidbits about the field maintenance of the grass that was played on. You know, there was no artificial turf, so it was all natural grass, and we're very interested to know about how they manicured their fields.
Well, yeah, so I actually had an earlier one. I think I probably have a link to it in this particular tidbit, but about, you know, the terrible field conditions of the past. And so, you know, now, you know, we've got artificial turf, we've got prescription grass, and, you know, most fields have, you know, good drainage and watering systems, if, you know, as needed. And there's just, you know, other ways. It's just, you know, the fields are so well maintained. You know, I mean, back in the day, and especially, you know, some stadiums that used to get really heavy use, if you just had one game or one weekend where it was rainy, the rest of the season, the whole central portion of the field was just mud or dirt. It just got torn up. You know, there's no way to avoid it. And, you know, that's one of the great benefits of artificial turf is that, you know, the turf doesn't really, you know, the central part of the field doesn't wear out, you know, so between the hash marks. But back in the day, it sure did. And so, you know, that's kind of a lost element of the game or of the experience, both as fans and then especially as players. But, you know, so I'm always looking at old yearbooks and other, you know, photo sources. And so, you know, back in the day, you know, there's certain things going on the field that you just notice and they're just like, what the hell are they doing there? And so, you know, they're obviously they're the muddy fields that I just mentioned. And, you know, one of the ways that they try to maintain or dry out muddy fields is they toss sawdust all over the field. And so, you know, I've got images, you know, Yale Field, you know, where there's sawdust all over the field, just trying to draw it out. Or dry it out, I should say. And then they, you know, they'd sometimes put hay on the field prior to the game, like if it was going to be icy, and then they'd rake it all off, you know, so all kinds of crazy stuff. And then, so then once that dirt got all, once the field became dirt rather than grass, then you see in early pictures where they raked, you know, you see all these lines in the dirt, and it's just because they raked, you know, just to get all the clumps out and all that kind of stuff. And then when it dried, then the whole field was just dusty, you know, So there's, again, I've got a bunch of pictures of guys, you know, just stepping on the field, running around. There's dust clouds falling. They all look like Pigpen from the Charlie Brown cartoon. But the other one that you see from time to time is long grass, you know, which is, you don't see it as much, but there's times where it's like, you know, I've got pictures of place kickers trying to kick off the grass. And it's like, the grass is literally like 12 inches tall. You know? And so it's like, how the heck did they maintain the grass? So I, you know, then I looked into that and it, you know, so initially, and I have to make sure I, you know, pronounce this correctly, but you know, I was asking like, well, how did they keep like football fields, baseball fields, parks, you know, and lawns trimmed back in the day? And so the one way that they did it was with a scythe, which is, you know, like the Grim Reaper, you know, with that pole, like
a sickle type.
Yeah, instrument. Yeah.
Okay.
And so, you know, so they had people out there, you know, cutting it that way. But then, you know, by like 1830, somebody came up with a mechanical lawnmower that pretty much, you know, looks like a real, and I mean real, meaning R-E-E-L, so a real mower that's used today, but obviously very clunky looking. And then, you know, they also had, you know, so there were the hand push versions, and then there were the horse pulled versions of these real mowers. But from time to time, they also reverted back to more traditional methods, which was to bring in a flock of sheep, and you just put the sheep out there on your football field or your baseball field and let, you know, let them at it.
And then you may have some new obstacles to try to avoid while you're playing.
Well, you know, and that would make the grass grow. So, yeah. And so
nothing like a good turd tackle. That's for sure.
Yeah. One of my brothers has a place out in California where, you know, it's basically a winery where the fields were so wet, or the wine, you know, everything was so wet because of all the rain they had. They brought in a bunch of sheep and just let the sheep go up and down the between the rows and, you know, eat back the grass. But yeah, so I mean, so you think about that, and it was even, you know, for sure, I've got pictures, you know, it included a picture from like 1943 of sheep grazing in the Rose Bowl trying to keep it back. And so even like in the 40s, especially, you know, with gas rationing because of the war, you know, we saw a return to sheep grazing on athletic fields just to, you know, to try to keep it trimmed. But, you know, I mean, there were, I think, New Mexico, Loyola Marymount, places like that also, you know, I've got newspaper articles anyways indicating, you know, in the late 30s, early 40s, that they were trimming their grass the old fashioned way.
Hey, just to put a comment, you know, the images that you have, and we have links to it in the show notes here, folks, and on Pigskin Dispatch from the accompanying article for Tim's images, the image of the sheep on the Rose Bowl field. I think they got the black sheep of every family in that photo, because I think there's like two that look like they might be lighter color. All the rest of them are very dark color sheep. So a lot of black sheeps in that family.
Well, there was, it may have been the breed, because there was the article mentioned the specific breed, which, you know, I don't know one. I don't know my sheep breeds. I apologize. But so it may be that it was just a function of,
we just want your football knowledge. We don't need your agricultural knowledge. So.
I'm not real good on the agricultural side.
Now that same image, the herdsman or the farmer that's caring for these sheep, he must be a pretty popular guy, because it looks like he has like a 5 gallon bucket of I'm assuming water, for these, you know, dozen or so sheep to all drink out of. So I'm sure they're very popular guy to with the water bucket.
So, I mean, the other thing, he could have had some grain in there, and then by tossing grain into different areas, it would attract the sheep to mow the whole field.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So, I mean, again, I'm guessing this only because I saw a YouTube video of some guy in like New Zealand who created a picture of a heart in his field, let the sheep in, he, you know, he spread grain in the shape of a heart, let the sheep out, and they all went, and then sheep formed a heart. You know.
So quite an art form to get your sheep to manicure your lawn
that's
quite
right.
Well. So, all right. Well, hey, I'm glad even more so this week when I have to cut the grass at the modern conveniences we have today. I'm not out there with a bucket throwing grain on my grass with a herd of sheep. So although we do like
those were the days. Those were the days.
All right. I had a little much harder in many ways. So we appreciate those pioneers of early football taking care of the yards that we played in and getting us to advance to where we are today. And now, Tim, you have some very interesting, fascinating pieces of football that even go beyond the game and equipment like this, you know, caring for the field, which is, you know, you have to have a field to play on. So it's, you know, it has to be that. And I know one point I was going to bring up too, is a really interesting study I saw just came out within the last week or so from the National Football League on injuries compared on natural grass fields that are played in the league versus the artificial fields. And there was a higher injury rate, as this study showed, in the 2022 season, where people on artificial fields were injured more often, or more injuries occurred than they did on the grass fields. And I don't know if you saw that, but it's kind of interesting going back to old school, possibly.
Yeah, I didn't see that. And, you know, I mean, it obviously when artificial turf first came out, it gripped so well that, you know, guys just blew out their knees all the time on that. And it was like playing on concrete. You know, I mean, I mostly played on natural grass, but I played on one or two artificial turf fields that were fairly early in the development. and it was, you know, it was horrible. But anyways, I'm a little bit surprised by that result, you know, just because, you know, my sense is that the artificial surfaces have come so far. But, you know, there's a certain amount of, you know, there's kind of no going back on some of it. You know, if you're in a dome stadium, you know, you're going to play on artificial turf, right? And then it's, you know, it's one thing to be on turf. You know, it just takes a lot of money from an ongoing maintenance standpoint to have a really well done natural turf. You know, so if you're the Packers or something like that, okay, you can afford it. A lot of other places, it's just, you know, so I mean, anyone in the NFL can afford to do it if that's the right thing, right?
Yeah, I know at Acrisure Stadium, the old Heinz Field in Pittsburgh, they replaced the turf, I think, two or three times during the NFL season. Of course, you know, the Pitt Panthers are playing on that. They have high school games, usually Thanksgiving weekend. They have four championship games, or five or six now. I think they have levels playing on that field. So it gets tore up that time of year, and they replace it within a couple of days before the NFL game. And that's why you see so many famous games played at Pittsburgh Stadium where chunks of the field are coming up, or they had a rainy Monday night game in Miami 20 some years ago where the punter kicked the ball and it came down point first and stuck right in the middle of the field. Yeah. And something.
Well,
like
you know, that actually it raises a point. You know, I don't know if the study was able to control for that, but you know, how long was the turf installed, you know, at the time an injury occurred? Cause you know, turf that's been in there for months is different than turf that was installed last Monday, right?
So. Yeah, I think they just took an aggregate of the 17 games, or I guess 8.5 games on average on each field, and looked around to see how many injuries happened at that field by the opponents, you know, both teams playing on it. So I think that's how they did the study on it. And, you know, it's got some you can sling some arrows at it and shoot some holes in it, but it's an interesting study and one I know the NFL takes seriously and player safety, as they do with most items. So anxious to see where that leads us to.
Yeah, interesting stuff.
Tim, your tidbits are, you know, bringing up items like this constantly every single day, sometimes a couple times a day. Why don't you share with the listeners how they too can share in on all the fun on hearing these?
Yeah. So, you know, best way is just to go to my website, footballarchaeology.com, subscribe. And that by doing that, you'll get an email every night at like 7 o'clock. I may actually push that a little bit later, but anyways, you'll get an email that with the story for that evening. And you know, if you don't, you know, want the emails, then just you can follow me on Twitter.
Yeah. So great subject. We really enjoyed having you share your knowledge with us, Tim, and appreciate you. And we will talk to you again next week.
Very good, sir. Look forward to it.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, it's found right here on the Sports History Network.